Hey, this is Troy Baker, and you're listening to the VRO, and if you're not listening, you're an effing idiot.
Hello, and welcome to the VRO. Tonight is a special interview. It is currently 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Time, and your hosts tonight are myself, Jess, and our lovely, outstanding producer, Amy, is on the switchboard today. Hey, Amy. I think she muted herself.
I always mute myself when I say have fun, guys. And you always bring me up. You're like, oh, hi, Amy. How are you doing? The rest of the hosts don't even, you know, they don't even acknowledge that I'm there. So I guess I appreciate that. I'm doing good,
yeah.
Jess.
See, I even care to ask. Now you can mute yourself.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Anyway, we have a special guest today. Rocker-turned-actor Troy Baker has become the go-to voice actor for the gaming community. He first began working in video games by playing Sergeant Matt Baker in Brothers in Arms, and can also be soon to be heard as Booker DeWitt, the narrative character of irrational game highly anticipated BioShock Infinite, which I've been hearing a million good things about in anticipation. Since he began, Troy has been chased by Ghostbusters as Slimer, shouted Steel Guard as Snow Villiers in Final Fantasy XIII. Those numbers get me all the time. Dodged grenades, RPGs, and Russian ultra-nationalists in Activision's juggernaut FPS Call of Duty, battled for the Autobots as Jetfire in Transformers War for Cybertron, and so many more that I can't even go into. We are very, very, very happy to get our geek on with Troy Baker. Hey, Troy.
Greetings. How are you tonight?
Good. Sorry for my flubs.
No, it's so funny because every time they say, you know, we're joined by the very special guest, I'm like, crap, now I've got something to live up to. Am I that special? Am I that interesting?
Well, what you do is actually very interesting. It's funny, I was reading your Twitters and you were saying how you're always humbled when you try to explain to people what you do in the outside world, and because you think it sounds so ridiculous.
It's the craziest job in the world. And we were at a bar the other night, and there was just a collective of us kind of taking over this one part of the bar. And someone was like, what do you guys do? And I was like, well, we have to like preface what we do so that people can at least get in the mindset to understand that people pay us to do this. And as my signature on my phone is, I play make-believe for a living. That's my job. So it's the coolest job in the world.
I can imagine. So can you tell us a little bit about how you got into voice acting? I mean, I know we touched upon the first things that you've done, but how did you actually get involved in voice acting?
It is the funniest, I don't know about funny story, but it's definitely the most ironic story. It literally is one of those right place, right time kind of things. I was, you know, like you said, a rocker turned musician, which I think is a really cool phrase that somebody came up with. I was a musician in Dallas, and while our band was doing our album at the studio, the studio that we did it at did a lot of commercial work. And so I just stumbled down the hall one day and popped my head in the door and was like, hey, I want to be in radio. And it just happened that they were looking for a new guy to do car commercials. So I just did what I'd always heard on the radio growing up. And it was like, this Sunday, 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 you know, that whole thing. Shake hands with the devil as he screamed on the motorplex. And it, you know, one thing led into another, and I've just been waiting for people to go, wait a minute, this guy isn't talented, he's just lucky. And so far nobody has, but it's so funny because, I mean, you know, I did, you know, went from doing anime, which is still, you know, that's where I cut my teeth doing this stuff is, you know, Japanese animation. And that led into doing video games led into doing TV and film. And then I just heard the Golden Gates of California calling, and which is really funny because Los Angeles is a funny town because you get here and it's like, welcome to Hollywood. Everything you want is here. And then a month later, they like slam the door and like, get a job, kid. And it just kicks you in the butt. So I think that's probably the best thing that ever happened to me is realizing that I'm not that good and I'm in a sea of people that are more talented than I am. So we're all just kind of struggling to, you know, make our mark in this industry.
Right. Yeah, I always say that Hollywood is like the city of broken dreams.
It is.
It's so depressing. I'm like, oh no, I don't want to go there.
Like you walk down Sunset, you're like, what did I just step in? Oh, that's shame and disappointment. That's what that is. Okay.
Nice. So actually, you were just talking about anime, and we have a question from one of your fans on Twitter.
Oh, awesome.
And Masters Chloe says, how are your video game voiceovers different to your anime voiceovers? She says that's if they're different at all work-wise.
I think that, you know, the characters can be the same as far as, like, the actual voice that you do for them. It's just the process is different. Anime is really, really hard. It is hands down the toughest part of the job. And if, you know, if any actors are listening or know about doing film ADR, it's like when you go in and you actually watch yourself on the screen and you have to match the movement of the mouth and, you know, with your words and deliver that all in the same pacing. With anime, it's hard because it's originally done in Japan, brought over to the West, and then the dialogue is not just, it's not translated, but the thoughts are translated. It's like, well, that's, you know, your mother is a goat is funny in Japan, but here it's like, that's stupid. And so you have to translate not just the words, but the thought, and then deliver that thought in a finite amount of space. So approaching anime is really, really hard, and it gets your chops, and you know, you learn the business end of a mic really, really quick. With video games, it's way more freeing because there's a plethora of ways that people are doing it now. Video games, to me, it's the coolest, most innovative medium because everyone is still figuring out how to do this. And you've got some people that just do a voice, and you have some people that do facial capture. You have other people that do full performance capture like we're doing on The Last of Us. And we're all just kind of figuring this out. It's very much in its infancy. So the characters may be the same, but and the, like the voices may be the same, but the difference between anime and video games is really just the approach.
Interesting. Now that actually touched on a question that I had, which was, do they show you parts of the video games or the films, you know, the animes that you're doing before you have to go into the this? I don't know what to call it, the sound booth.
The booth, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, are they playing it? Right? Do they always play it right? You get to see it beforehand and then figure out, okay, this is the pacing, or do you just have to like see it while you're doing it and then just take a million takes? How does that work?
It really depends. I mean, with anime, it's like, all right, here it is, and you listen to it. Oh, Cody was. He's on the, oh, and you're like, okay, so that's the way they did it. We're not going to do it that way. So think on the fly and make it cool. So it's like, crap, okay, here's my job. And a lot of times, you know, it's just like, yeah, it's a pretty much a simple thing. I love it when it says off screen. I'm like, yes, or MNS means mouth not seen, which means I can really play because I don't have the limitations of the mouth flaps. So definitely with anime, you have to watch it and rehearse it. And typically, you know, unless it's a really difficult line, you'll get it in 1 to 2 takes. But it is always the simplest of lines that I'm like, crap, why can't I say what the, you know, what the, it doesn't come out right, you know. Let me hear a little bit more hair in that what the, it doesn't really come across. And with video games, you're in this nebulous space. A lot of times you'll get, you know, a character description or you know, at least you'll be able to see what your character looks like, and they may have some really early renderings. But the voice is one of the earliest things that they do in a game because they have to get those performances into the game and then start building the game around it. So it just really depends.
Oh. So with the video games, oftentimes they'll build the visual off your performance.
Yeah, like what we're doing with this game, The Last of Us, which is Naughty Dog, who was wildly successful with not only Jack and Dexter but also Uncharted. Uncharted really kind of set the standard for how performances are in video games. It became more cinematic. It became more of a actual narrative. And, you know, Uncharted was very much a pulp adventure. It was like, you know, if Laura Croft and Indiana Jones got together, this would be their love child. And what they're doing now is taking that and putting it into a much more grounded in reality, even though it's not a far-fetched concept, but it's definitely a post-apocalyptic what would happen if, you know, the world crumbled, this fungus, you know, invaded humanity and took down all of government and economics and everything. What would that world look like? And you have these two characters, my character Joel and Ellie, who's played by Ashley Johnson, who's amazing. And what would the two of them look like in this world? And so what we do is Naughty Dog's been working on this game for the last 2 years. we came into it last year, and it was one of those projects where you always have some excuse. Typically it's like, ah, well, the script isn't good or the game's not good or something. And Ashley and I walked out of this table read and we looked at each other just, you know, mouth agape going, if this sucks, it's because of us, because everything else is brilliant. And what they're actually doing is we do full performance capture in a stage, like a sound stage, and they're capturing our facial movements, they're capturing our body, and they're capturing our voices at the same time. And Neil Druckmann, who's the creative director, and Bruce Straley, who's the game director, we work hand-in-hand with these guys, and we'll workshop scenes. We'll rehearse an entire day, and then we'll shoot for 2 days after that for just like four or five scenes. So it's really like doing a film. So it's a completely different process than, you know, where this started out, especially even, you know, 5-6 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine that it would be a little bit, even though it's more complicated technically, to me it seems like it would be a lot easier because you actually have somebody to play off of in, like, an actual scene as opposed to literally just having the script and the movie or the screen in front of you and just, okay, go.
Absolutely. I mean, there's some, you know, aspect of coolness when it's just you and you get to kind of create this and you really get to imagine, you know. And if I was a kid who, my favorite toys were my, you know, broken G.I. Joes, I would play in the backyard and I created an entire world with them. So this is just simply a bigger and different sandbox. But with this, you know, having other people to play off of, okay, that makes all the difference in the world because it's really like doing a film. The idea that I have for a scene can completely change based on the actor that I'm working with if they approach it with a different thing. And you get to have that organic thing like you would with a film.
Okay.
Am I blowing your mind right now?
Yeah, you kind of am.
It's really funny because not a lot of people, you know, or at least now people are starting, the industry as a whole are starting to look at video games and go, wait a minute, you know, if we've got a video game that is breaking all records like Call of Duty, you know, when they're doing bigger numbers than Avatar and bigger numbers than Harry Potter, you know, that makes the industry stand up and take notice. And then people are now starting to see that it's no longer, you know, Mario Brothers and Duke Nukem, but there's an actual serious narrative and this is a respectable, you know, viable medium for conveying an experience, not just a story, but an actual immersive experience. And
yeah, I mean, it's kind of like a choose-your-own-adventure book, but you're actually living the character. I mean, it's right in front of you.
Completely. Like, if we went to go see a horror movie together, you'd be like, don't go through that door, and this
right.
way you can actually control whether they do or not, you know?
Right,
totally
right.
different.
Yes. There is actually a question from, a live question, actually, from somebody. JNG789 says, if you weren't a voice actor, what do you think you would have been or would like to do?
I'd probably have blown my brains out by this point because I need that creative outlet. I don't know. I mean, I'm still a musician.
Right.
And
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Have you ever
sure.
played music on one of the videos or would you like to?
I would love to. We actually got the chance to do Akira Yamaoka, who is the composer, has been the composer for all of the Silent Hill games. We got to go.
That's a creepy game.
What's that?
That's a creepy game.
creepy game.
Yes.
We went in and we actually did, they're doing a HD re-release of Silent Hill 2 along in tandem with two other games, Book of Memories and Downpour. And we actually got to go in and I got to rearrange one of Akira's songs. I'm a huge fan of his anyway. So I got to sing with him and Mary Elizabeth McGlynn, who's done all of the Silent Hill music as well. We got to sing together on a song for a game called Shadows of the Damned. And then we also got to play in front of 5,000 people in Paris for a huge convention. It was honestly, even though my band, we toured, you know, all over the country, that was the coolest show I've ever played because it was just this huge rock show. It was amazing. And we got to do a new song for the new Silent Hill Book of Memories. And I was actually just listening to it in my car, and it came out pretty good. I'm pretty proud of it. I got to arrange it and perform on it and sing a little bit. And Mary Elizabeth McGlynn just has the most amazing voice. And Akira got to do the guitar solo. So that's the only time that a game or a song that I've ever done has actually been in a video game.
That is just so cool. It's just amazing what you guys are doing. It's just so,
hell yeah, it's cool. It's
so
amazing. It's limitless.
I love it. But Chrissy Monster on Twitter also asked, and this might touch on some of the other questions that you answered, but she's looking for a more specific answer. She's saying, what has been the most challenging voiceover you've done in your career so far, and which has been the most fulfilling?
Oh, wow. What a great question.
Isn't it?
I think that,
like,
you know, obviously... Yeah, it's like, what's your favorite breath? Well, if you asked a drowning man, it'd be like, the one I took before I got in the water. That was
right.
My favorite. I honestly think that because this process has evolved over the last several years, and, you know, I've been in it for the last, you know, almost 10 years now. God, I'm getting old. I think that the challenges have gotten bigger and greater, and therefore, the greater the challenge, the bigger the challenge, the bigger the fulfillment. And I definitely think that these two projects, Bioshock Infinite and The Last of Us, have been hands down the most challenging, and I think will be the most rewarding. Bioshock is challenging because, you know, for the gamers out there listening, if they're familiar with the Bioshock franchise, the player character has never said anything. He's been a silent protagonist. Now what we're doing is we're shaking up that game from a fundamental level and actually making the player character, giving him a voice and giving him personality and defining the parameters that the character is. And that's very, very risky, because when you're playing a first-person game, the point of it being first-person is you literally want to feel like those are your eyes that are looking and your hands that are moving, as opposed to what's considered a third-person game, which means you're watching that character move around. You're both in control of it, but it's just two different ways of doing it. So that's been a challenge, because you're constantly thinking, if I say this, is that going to pull the player out of the experience? Are they going to go, I wouldn't do that, or I wouldn't say that? So it's been this process with Ken Levine and I, who's the director, and he has this phrase, he says, drain the swamp, pull it back. Any cool thing you want to add to this, don't do it, and trust the character, trust the writing, and trust that what you have is interesting enough. And it's really interesting that the process that we're doing Bioshock is diametrically different than what we're doing with The Last of Us, but that transcendent concept is parallel to that, because Last of Us, it is my performance. It's a completely different character, but it's learning that what I have is interesting enough, and the character is interesting enough without me trying to dress him up, and really stripping that down and letting just a look carry all the weight as much as a huge line. So I don't think I've ever really been challenged as an actor until now. And to be honest with you, we were on the stage a couple weeks ago, and I hit a wall. I hit a brick wall as an actor, and that's never happened to me before. And I think that's because I've never been challenged like this before. So now I'm like, wait a minute, I really got to think about this, and what am I doing, and maybe I don't have the skill set that I need for this. And so it's you know, causing me to examine myself as an actor and really get outside of my comfort zone. And I want to be dangerous, so this gives me the opportunity to do that.
Right. So the answer to that question is really, it's a double-edged sword. The most challenging is the most fulfilling.
Absolutely it is.
Yeah.
Absolutely. A good friend of mine, Travis Willingham, has a phrase, and he's an actor as well, and he says, you know, we do what makes us tremble. We have to do what makes us tremble, because otherwise we don't know what we're capable of. And so this has really been the process of, I'm going to do this even though I'm shaking in my boots while I'm doing it.
Here's another question for you.
Sure.
If you could pick any gaming anime or cartoon role to record that you haven't already, who would you do and why?
Oh, my gosh. I'm really biased because I'm still a Saturday morning kid, you know?
Me too.
It's like saying, well, I think I could do Bugs Bunny better than Mel Blanc. You know, you love those characters because of, you know, what you've grown up listening to, and that's what you're used to. And we're, you know, familiarity just endears that to you so much. So it's really hard for me to say, if they were to ever do this, I would want to be that. Man, I'm drawing a blank, because I always want to pull from, you know, something that I was, Star Wars, I want to do Han Solo, you know. Not Luke Skywalker, more of a Han Solo. I want to be the cool guy. But it's really hard because I've grown up, you know, I remember my first experience. I was the guy that, like Batman the Animated Series, when that was on TV in the 80s and 90s, I, you know, would watch that, come home from school and watch that, and would point, you know, it's, you know, VHS had the wavy lines when you paused it, and I would be like, oh my gosh, that's who this guy is. And that's when I, you know, fell in love, and Kevin Conroy became my Batman, Mark Hamill became my Joker, and Andrea Romano, who I've had a chance to work with, I pointed to the screen and said, one day I'm going to work with her. You know, that was my heroes were the people that nobody knew, Rob Paulsen and Jess Harnell, who were on the Animaniacs, which if you're a, you know, 90s cartoon kid, you know them.
Yes.
So it's so hard for me to separate myself from my own memories of going, I would want to do that. We were just talking about The Phantom Tollbooth, which was, you know, a children's book in the 60s, like 69, I think, is when they did it, was you know, Chuck Jones, who did a lot of Tom and Jerry stuff and those kind of cartoons. They did this feature, and The Phantom Tollbooth. I'm like, I would love to do a voice in The Phantom Tollbooth, because that was such a big part of my childhood. So that'll be my answer. The Phantom Tollbooth. I would want to play the King of Rhyme or Reason. That's who I would want to be.
Okay, that's your official answer.
And 1% of your audience just got that at best. 1%.
You'd be surprised.
I'm that cool and that obscure.
Well, speaking of that, are you a big gamer yourself? Like, I know you work in the industry, but do you ever play video games and, like, get creeped out because all of a sudden you hear your voice?
It's the most frustrating thing in the world when, because I'm a huge gamer. I mean, I was a gamer before I was an actor. I go back to, like, I'm old school. I'm like Atari 1600 with the wood grain and the silver toggles. That's me, yo. So I'm a huge gamer, and not just the games that I'm in, but, you know, games period. You know, I wasn't in Assassin's Creed, but I love playing Assassin's Creed. I wasn't in Uncharted, but that's one of my favorite games. So I love games, and I love where games are at now. The most frustrating thing is when you're playing as yourself. Like Saints Row the Third came out this last fall, and I was the default player character, because you can completely customize your character. You be a guy, a girl, you can be white, African American, or Hispanic, whatever, skinny, fat, whatever. But I'm the default guy, and so I, of course, you know, narcissist that I am, I played as myself, and I was yelling at myself, and so my fiance is like in the other room, and she's hearing my character yell and then me yell back, and she was like, you are fighting with yourself. This is insanity. That's the definition of crazy, is fighting with yourself. Why are you doing that? I don't understand. So, but it's honestly, it's the best perk of the job, is to, you know, be a part of something that you're going to geek out over later.
Nice. actually, you mentioned The Last of Us earlier, and I apologize. I did not get the person's Twitter name. Forgive me, sir. I know it was a gentleman. And he says, can you give us hints? I know you're not going to be able to, but I'm going to ask the question. Can you give us hints on how Joel and Ellie's relationship develops throughout the game?
Oh, my gosh. I can tell you this much.
Okay.
That is the entire premise of the game. It's not the infected. It's not the world. It's not what happened to them before. But this game literally is about the journey that these two people go on, and what that relationship starts as, goes through, and then becomes. And that's really been a focus that all of us with the creative team, and even with the people that are doing, you know, the level design and everything else, is capturing that essence. Because I think if we miss the mark on that, then we've missed the mark on the game. Because anybody can go and play a game where they blow people up, or they shoot people, or they scavenge around. But the thing that's going to make this game different is, by the time you get done with this, you really feel like you've gone through something. And there's been a couple of, like, I've been a part of some of the meetings, and they've talked about Ellie, who's the companion character, who's played by Ashley Johnson. They said, well, what if Ellie could do this? And this, he said, Neil Druckmann, the creative director, said, the second that we start thinking of Ellie as a game mechanic, we've lost. She's not a mechanic. She's not a part of the game. She's a person. And so there's this real humanity that's assigned to that. You know, we anthropomorphize this person into being. It's an actual person that we care about. And the stuff that we've done already, and the stuff that I've seen, you're going to cry. You know, you're really going to go through something with this. So that's about all that I can divulge right now. But it's definitely, it's not a lover, you know, relationship, which people were, you know, expecting for. It's not a father-daughter thing. It's a father-daughter-like relationship. But definitely the relationship between the two of those characters is the game.
Okay. Well, that's as good of an answer as you could ever expect to get before the fact.
And so. I made that up. That's what's crazy.
Good job.
So Sony can't get mad at me. I made it up off the top of my head.
Sweet. So you've actually been on camera with Comanche Moon and I believe Striking Range.
Striking Range.
You also did some music for with Chick Fontaine. But do you prefer being on camera or do you prefer doing the voice acting?
I honestly, if you had to nail me down, I mean, I like acting, period, but I can say that if you had to nail me down on what my favorite is, I definitely love doing this in games because with video games and with it being my voice, I can literally be anybody, anything. Mm-hmm. You know, I've played Conan the Barbarian before, and I don't know if you've seen a picture of me. You're not going to cast me as Conan the Barbarian. So it affords me the ability to really, it focuses on the core quintessential aspects of how you are as an actor without the limitations of the physicality, and which I think is a very purist form of acting, to where you're not jaded or you know, prejudiced against a person simply because of the way that they look. And I love being on camera. You know, that Western was incredible. Comanche Moon was an incredible experience, and more for what happened off camera than happened on camera. A friend of mine, Carl Urban, who's plays, you know, Bones McCoy on Star Trek, he and I are still close friends. He's actually filming right now, like a mile away from my house, and we're going to grab drinks. Steve Zahn, who I'm just name dropped. I just realized that.
Yeah, you totally did. It's okay. You're allowed.
I hate people that name drop. My friend George Clooney does it all the time. And but the thing that is limiting about that is, you know, I had a meeting one time with Alan Ball, who's the, you know, American Beauty and Six Feet Under and True Blood. And I'm sitting there in the meeting with him, and he's shaking his head while I'm going through this scene. And I'm like, you realize that's a total mind job for an actor. He goes, I know, you're just... I love what you're doing. You're great. I'm like, awesome. He goes, you look so vampiric. That's a good thing. This is a show about vampires. He goes, not this guy. I can't use you. Not this guy. So, you know, whereas what my choices and the performance and everything was perfect and right in line with what he wanted, he had to have a different look. And with video games, you don't have that. With animation, you don't have that. So I love the freedom that gives me.
Okay, this is surprising. I didn't think that you were going to choose that, but that's cool.
Well, it's funny because most people look at like video games and animation as a side gig. They look at it as a little stepping stone or I'll just do this on the side. And I respect that. That's totally fine if you're really going after, you know, the big film career or whatever. I just have no desire to do like a guest spot on CSI. That's not me. I'll always play the skeezy underhanded guy. That'll be me. That's the way that, you know, I've always played bad guys. But with this, again, I really, really believe in the medium. And at least right now, the industry is kind of something that I'm doing, whatever it is that I have, is resonating with that. So I'm going to put my best foot forward, and I'm already a gamer. I love what I do, and it's so challenging and so interesting. Why would I want to go off and do anything different?
Right. And you're able to survive, live, and pay your bills doing it at the same time, which is also important.
Stupid.
Right.
It's stupid that I get to do that.
They're very, very important. I mean, everybody says they want to be an actor, but, you know, they wind up doing waitress gigs and working in movie theaters and temping, but you're actually able to do acting and get paid for it on a regular basis. I mean, I was looking at your IMDb. That was sick. I was like, I couldn't even put everything in here. It would take me 15 minutes.
And the thing is that fact keeps me humble because I have to remind myself, if I really want to stop and examine, and I'll get frustrated with the scene or I'll get frustrated with the project or frustrated with my performance or something about it, And I've got a good friend of mine, Liam O'Brien, who's is an amazing actor and does a ton of video game work and voiceover work. He's like, you have to remember that at any given point on any job, there are 100 people at least lined up willing to do this for free. So, you know, really examine your frustration. You know, boo-hoo that you have to go and you don't like that line. Oh, no, you know, because it doesn't represent you as an actor. No, come on. What we do is ridiculous. I'm looking at my cat right now who's like, what are you doing? I'm such a dog person, but my fiance has this cat, and I've just come to love her. But she and I have such a relationship, it's like we're cool, right? And she'll, like, love on me when she's ready. But
yeah,
then when I'm stopped, you know,
cat.
If I can, like, pet on her, she's like, okay, that's enough. That's enough.
Right.
What are you doing?
Right.
Enough, okay? Don't get too close.
That is the quintessential cat right there.
Yes.
So. Welcome to the fan club. I have one more question for you. You did mention Saturday morning cartoons, and you did also mention one of my favorite shows, which was the Batman series.
Oh.
Animated series. One of the fans asked, when doing the character of Two-Face Harvey Denton, did you research how others played the character, or did you try to develop a uniqueness to the character all your own?
Well, like, the funny thing about that is, I mean, again, in my mind, I'm so pre-programmed to those characters as they were portrayed in the animated series, you know, because they did this such a great job, you know. And I'm a Richard Mall fan from Night Court. I mean, he's Bull Shannon to me, you know. But what to me, he really captured the essence of not only Two-Face but also Harvey Dent. I mean, it's such a cool character. I'm a comic book nerd. And admittedly, I'm more of a Marvel kid than I am a DC. It's a Pepsi Coke thing. They're both good, but it's like whichever one you like. But Batman is the only DC because it's the original DC, you know, Detective Comics. And I love Batman. I love the story of Batman. It's a normal guy that is, you know, this is his reckoning. Him becoming a superhero is his not only revenge, but it's his reckoning for his parents' death. And all the characters that are in that are the most intriguing villains. Because they're not superheroes. They're just crazy people. And especially with Two-Face, you have this incredibly complex, conflicted person who Harvey Dent, he was a district attorney. He was a good guy. He upholds the law. And then through this accident, you know, his bad side comes out, and that's where you get the Two-Face. So a lot of people say, hey, you did a great job. You really did a good job of, you know, capturing Aaron Eckhart. And I'm like, well, that's not, you know, cool. I think Aaron Eckhart did a great job. But, you know, to me, it's definitely more of, like, I was a huge fan of Arkham Asylum, the graphic novel. And then when I found out they were making a game about that, I was like, oh, my gosh, how are you going to do that as a game? And it was amazing. And then I actually, you know, the Two-Face thing was a curveball to me. Because I went in for the session, and I thought I was just doing, like, a couple of lines as Robin, which was going to be a DLC, a downloadable content thing for the game. And Colette Sunderman, who is an amazing director and a dear friend, she was like, oh, by the way, you're also playing Two-Face. And I literally fanboyed the field. I was like, what? So the fact that I got to do that – so, I mean, I was just trying to do Two-Face. And I think one of the reasons why I got the gig was because Colette knew that I could do basically what Richard Mall did in the series. And I even asked, I was like, why aren't you just getting Richard Mall? Because he was so great. And, you know, that was the fan part of me speaking out. But I loved being able – and they asked me, do you want to do all of Harvey Dent's lines and then do Two-Face? Or I said, no, let's do them together. And so the first scene that you see with Harvey Dent and Two-Face – is me literally switching back and forth between those two voices in one take. So hopefully it came across, you know, people dug it. But, yeah, I was definitely just trying to do Two-Face and do, you know, honor to the role as opposed to a specific actor that portrayed him.
That's awesome. It was funny, too, because I'm thinking of you doing Harvey Dent and Two-Face. And I read a Twitter earlier today where you were saying that the amount of spittle on your script determines how productive you determine how productive you've been for the day or how.
Oh my gosh, my performance, my performance is directly proportionate to the amount of spit that's left in my iPad, which is what I use for my script. It's like if I'm really going for it, I look down, I'm like, that's gross. I'm just like covering this thing. And I was working on a show, and it was just me and the lead, and he was looking at it. I showed him my iPad. He's like, bro, you spit a lot. I'm like, I know. I don't know what it is. I'm sorry. And they're like, as long as the performance is good, I guess. But, and I think that's, you know, I think you have, yeah, well, you have to have some mic technique. But I think once I threw out all of the, this is what you do, and this is how you say the vowel A, you know, once I threw that out and just talked like people talk, I think that I kind of tapped into something, but apparently that translates to me spitting a lot. So I hope I don't spit a lot when I talk to people. I'm looking at myself and, like, the phone. I'm like, I haven't spit all over this phone while we've been talking, have I?
Well, I actually have one more question for you.
Go for it.
Tell us a little bit about Road Rage.
Road Rage. Road Rage was I laugh. That's the premise. That's the setup for it. It was, so there's a huge anime convention in Anaheim every year, and now it's actually at the LA Convention Center, but it was at Anaheim this year called Anime Expo. And I'd just come off of Comanche Moon, and they were showing a screening of this anime movie that I was in called Full Metal Alchemist. And so I was there promoting that, and I blame Bacardi, because they had a booth inside of the convention hall, and I had nothing but free time. So I got to know the Bacardi people really, really well. So I'm roaming around this convention hall, and I'm a nerd, so I'm like checking out all the, you know, dealers' exhibits and stuff, and this camera guy comes up to me and was like, hey, you're Troy Baker, right? I was like, I think so. Let me check my wallet. And he said, well, can we get an interview with you real quick? I'm like, sure. So I grabbed the mic, and I was like, are you ready? Let's go. And I start walking around the convention hall interviewing people that are interviewing, which is really, really funny. And you may have some experience with this. You're totally in control when you're interviewing. But when somebody flips those roles on you, it can really shoot your wheels off. So
yes,
we start getting all of these amazing interviews with people like from G4 and all this stuff that are interviewing people at Anime Expo. And one of the people that I happened to interview was the marketing manager for an animation company called Funimation. So a couple of weeks later, I'm in Dallas at Funimation, and I get called into her office, which felt like I was getting called in the principal's office. And she said, I just watched the footage that you guys did at Anime Expo. What do you need? I was like, what do I, to shut up? What are you asking me? And she says, I want to build a show around this. Let's do this. And so we started flying around the country and doing this whole, you know, kind of travel channel kind of expo thing on pop culture conventions. And it was so much fun. We did Chicago and Boston and New York and LA and all of these different, you know, crazy cities. And it was my first taste of producing. You know, actually, I'm in charge of putting this thing together. And we ran it down and dirty, super low crew, and totally shot from the hip. And it was a fun process. And, you know, it ran its course. And, you know, eventually they were like, all right, we're not going to put any more money into this. And so they abandoned the show. But it was so much fun. And I think it's still floating around somewhere. But it was so much fun to be in a completely different element as far as being a host, being a producer, and it gave me way more respect for the process of actually making a show. So whenever I see a really good, like, reality show, I'm not talking like Big Brother or anything like that, but like, or Hoarders, I'm so upset right now that my fiance is into Hoarders. It is one of the most morally debased shows that's out there. This coming from a, you know, person who's watching Walking Dead religiously.
I love The Walking Dead.
I do too. I just, there's a couple of characters that I'm really ready for them to get bit or scratched because I want them to go away. And I was a fan of the graphic novel too. So, but you know, Road Rage, I would love to do another show like that, but not just have it be about, you know, anime conventions or whatever, But an idea that we had for the show was actually juxtaposing. We went to this one convention one time, and half of the convention hall was an anime convention. The other half was a gun show. So just the pure dichotomy in that situation was, it would have made for great TV. So maybe we'll you know, redo the show where it's, you know, the National Jell-O Convention next to the Porn Convention. Who knows? But it just shows you how crazy and diverse this country is.
Thank you, Troy. We really enjoyed having you. And
oh,
you
pleasure.
Please come back anytime. Let us know if you're, you know, working on anything new, especially when the games start to come. I know BioShock is supposed to come out very soon. So I think it's supposed to, or maybe that's just wishful thinking.
We're definitely looking at the end of 2012 is, I think, what they're trying
is
to shoot for. Don't put me on that.
Yeah.
Well, which, you know, it'll be awesome because, like, we'll have this great game come out and then the world will end. So, you know,
exactly.
I go out on a bang.
There you go. But definitely we'd love to have you back again anytime you want to promote a game or just shoot the shit. Feel free to come
I
on.
I would love to do that. I'm very good. I'm a marksman when it comes to shooting shit. So,
sweet.
Pretty good.
Thank
well,
you
thank
so
you,
much.
Ladies, so much for having me, and hopefully we'll chat to you soon.
Yes,
okay.
Thank you.
Cheers.